Jess may think of my disappearance. They must have believed that Ternia took me back to the clans. Perhaps they thought I was dead. It was doubtful that Talaxthi would have told them the truth. Jesme and Nadia would not have been happy to know that the Empress killed Ternia's warriors and then still attempted to exile me. 3 years. I had never heard others mention the radicals robbing them of years of their life. Had I used the magic incorrectly? My head began to ache as I recalled my last memory. Entis. I was lost on the islands again, jumping between the skies, flirting with the birds, playing amongst the clouds. Until he spoke to me, I was distracted by the island dream world. Entis had convinced me to return, but I was certain that it took him hundreds, maybe thousands of attempts to remind me of my life here. It took him 3 years. I heard Bethany approaching, and shook my head to draw my attention back to the present. I had to be careful now when traveling through the radicals. I could not allow myself to become lost and delayed in the dream world again, not while my daughter waited for me. Bethany opened the door to her room and entered with a smile on her pretty face. She carried a bundle of servants' clothes and a basket of food. The scent of bread and cheese filled my nose, and I recalled that my last meal was with Yillamar in my tent before he asked me to spar with him. That was either a day ago or 3 years ago, depending on which clock I chose to count. My stomach confirmed it had been 3 years, and my salivary glands burned in anticipation of a meal. "This should fit you." She handed me the bundle and set them on my bed. I pulled off my blood-crusted attire. I heard Bethany gasp, and I turned my attention to the young woman. Her mouth hung open, and her eyes were as large as dinner plates. "Something wrong?" "No." She turned a shade of dark red, and then spun her head away to face the door. I remembered that these people were not used to seeing each other naked, and I probably should have given her a warning. What should I do with these old clothes? I still reeked of battle and sweat, but at least now my clothes would not make this so evident. I'll take care of them. She turned her head back to me, just slightly, and once she saw I was fully dressed, she completed the spin to face me. I thought you might be hungry. Bethany was still blushing, and she looked at the basket she carried shyly. "I am, thank you. I would like to ask you more questions while I eat. I've been away from Naya for too long." "I will do what I can to help you." I was thankful again for her presence and cooperation. She could have just left me here and brought the guards. It would have made my mission even more difficult. "Thank you," I said when she handed me the basket. I tore a chunk of brown bread off of the loaf and then paired it with soft cheese. There was a small bottle of wine in the basket as well, and I tore the cork off with my teeth and washed the food down with a splash of the red liquid. It was dry and tasted slightly of apricots in its finish. "Do you know where Nadia resides?" "She is in the rebuilt East Wing, next to the small library on the fourth floor," Bethany answered. "Is Duke Beltor still in the castle?" "Yes, his suite is down the hallway from the Duchess." "Where does Queen Jesme stay?" "In the North Wing, the royal family suites." "What about the Empress?" "She is also in the North Wing. Her suites are next to the Queen's." I wanted to ask the young woman about the current political structure between the elvens and the humans. I wanted to understand how much had changed in the last few years, and if my friends were safe and free or serving a sentence of slavery, however comfortably they may have been kept. But as she had said, she was a simple servant girl, and probably unaware of any political nuances or intrigue involving the rulers of her home. "Do you know of the big warrior, Graykin?" "Oh, yes." Her smile grew impossibly large. "Everyone knows him. I don't know where his rooms are, though. I'd guess the North Wing, as he is often with the Queen. I nodded and thought through what I should do next while I finished my food. The bread was still warm, and I tried not to wolf down the small meal, but my stomach growled with desire as soon as the first bite landed. Jesme would be heavily guarded and difficult to reach. There would be plenty guarding Nadia as well, but my priority was finding out my daughter's name and getting to the Radical as quickly as possible. I wanted to see Jesme again and confirm that the Empress was treating her fairly, but I had to go to Nadia first. I had overlooked an important detail. If it had been 3 years since I left this world, my kin must have realized that something was amiss and sent warriors in search of Ternia. They were not here, which meant that Jesme had learned to close the Radicals, or the Obarni had not yet sent an envoy here. But I came through the Radical, so they must not be closed. Why were they left unguarded? Was the Empress unaware of the Radical beneath this very castle? Wasn't that one of the reasons she had chosen to invade Naya, due to its strategic position near a Radical? Can you tell me more of the Elvens and their role in the country now? Is there any violence against humans? I have seen nothing in the castle. In the city, I hear people complain of harsh and restrictive laws, but there is less crime now, and the merchants seem happy. I know the country is doing better than it was when the ancients invaded. We sat in silence for a few moments. "What will you do now?" she asked. I sighed and considered my answer before the sound of heavy boot falls thundered down the hallway outside of Bethany's room. "Do any warriors live in rooms in this part of the castle?" I asked her. "No." Her smile faded. The boot steps grew closer. Perhaps they would continue past this room, but I feared the dozens of guards who had seen me stumble around in a blood-stained daze when I entered the courtyard were here to apprehend me. The boots stopped in front of the doorway, and I raised a finger over Bethany's lips to keep her from speaking. Her brown eyes grew wide with fear. She must have regretted helping me. I touched her left shoulder with my right hand and carefully guided her body to the rear of the small room and readied myself to fight whoever had found me. The expected knock sounded, and my heart raced with adrenaline. The man on the other side of the door knocked again, and then sighed heavily. His exhale was familiar, and before I could even reach the doorknob, relief had already flooded my heart, and a smile was on my lips. "Skinny!" The big man wrapped me up in his bear hug before I opened the door halfway. His body filled the room, but his embrace was so full of love that the space did not feel small. I didn't believe her, but here you are. My face was buried in the man's massive chest, and my nose was overpowered by the scent of salt, sandalwood, weapon oil, and beer. I heard his foot connect with the door, and the thick piece of wood closed behind him. "Youch! Careful, Skinny. You're too strong for these old bones." Graykin gave a short yelp when I returned his hug, but then he seemed to match my strength enough to drive the air from my lungs. "How did you know I was here?" "Ah, lad, a better question is, where in the fucking spirits have you been?" He held me at arm's length and looked up and down my body. "Also, why haven't you been eating? You're always too damn skinny, Skinny." I let out a laugh and shrugged my shoulders. My heart seemed to push against my chest, and I realized that it was the affection I held for the old bear that made my eyes want to water. The big man was a great friend, and I knew that if he was still in the castle, then the situation in the country of Naya was probably not as bad as the story I told myself. "I'll tell you everything, but it is going to take some time." I turned to Bethany and realized that she had moved to sit on her bed so that Graykin and I had more room to embrace. "Bethany, be a good girl and return to your duties." "Yes, sir." She got up from the bed and squeezed between us. "We are going to stay here a bit. Don't speak to anyone about Kyair. You understand, lass?" "Yes, I do, sir. I am glad I found him." "Me too. I'll let the Queen know that you helped the royal family once again." "Thank you." Her eyes opened wide, and she smiled with unabashed joy. Then she gave me a last glance before she opened the door. "I'll see you later on, perhaps?" "I hope so. Thank you again." I returned her smile, and she nodded before exiting her room. "Ah, Skinny. When I was your age, I had the same power with women. They could never seem to keep their undergarments on when I walked past them." "Why?" "Ha! 'Cause they all wanted to take them off, of course. When you were my age, Graykin, I am over 5,000 years old, my big friend." I smiled when I spoke, but I really didn't understand what he meant about women's undergarments. "Ah, yes. Nadia and Jesme have told me of your history. That is why I am here." 3 years have passed, Graykin. Last I remember, I lay on the stone bench at the Radical near Brilla, and it sent me here. I felt only minutes had passed. He nodded his big head, and his beard swayed with the movement. I noticed that the hair was a touch more white than gray now, and the man had more weather to the stone of his face. Jesme summoned me to her room 20, maybe 30 minutes ago. She said that you were here now, and I needed to find you in the castle. How did she know I was here? The castle is a big place. I'm surprised you found me. She's changed, my friend. He closed his eyes and sighed. She's not my little girl anymore. His face turned red for a brief second, and then he shrugged his giant shoulders. She was never my daughter, of course, but I spent almost every one of my waking hours protecting her for the last 21 years. She told me to look for you in the courtyard by the dungeons, and then she asked me to bring you to her. How did she know I was here, then? I asked the question again. She knows magic now, Skinny. I don't understand the stuff, but she... He paused, and the big man seemed to search for the words. She is still Jesme, but, well, I'm just glad you are here, lad. It's been a long time since the lass smiled. She will be happy to see you. I hope so. How will you bring me to her? I had intended to see Nadia first, but Graykin's appearance was more than welcome. I wondered how Jesme knew that I was in the castle, but I guessed that she would explain the situation to me when I spoke with her. We'll just walk to the royal wing. I doubt anyone will recognize you wearing those clothes. We can talk more while we journey there. They may not recognize me, but you don't escape notice, my friend. I laughed slightly and walked out of the door of Bethany's room once the big man opened it. True, but you must admit that I fill the hallway with so much manliness that it is hard to pay attention to anyone else. I'm afraid that you'll have to continue to stand in my shadow for a bit longer. He let out another laugh, and I felt my heart warm again at his joke. How is Danor? I asked after a few steps. He is fine. Out of the castle now. Beltor, Knight Captain Danor, and a few thousand Naya warriors have been working in the Teeth Mountains to eradicate these strange lizard monsters. I have seen those beasts. I heard a rumor that you killed a few thousand of them with a wave of your hand. They could have used your help. We just got a message 2 weeks ago that they have cleared the monsters finally. Nadia is preparing to journey back home and rebuild the keep and its city with her father. I nodded at his words and recalled the endless swarm of the horrible creatures that lived in the bowels of the Teeth Mountains. How is Runeer? He was promoted last year, Vice General. There was a big celebration. That is good to hear. How about Merrick? as grouchy as ever. I think I saw him smile for a few seconds at Runeer's promotion. Jesme and the Empress both bestowed gifts upon the lad, and Merrick looked as proud as if he'd just defeated all of Van Lorn with the sharp edge of his penis. I laughed, but then closed my mouth when we walked by a pair of elven guards. They wore blue and nodded slightly at Graykin. The big man nodded in return, but they did not otherwise greet each other. "How is the relationship with the elvens?" I whispered, after I believed the elvens to be out of earshot. "It is difficult. They don't like us. We don't like them," he said with a sigh, confirming what I had sensed from the brief interaction we had just had with the elvens. "I wish I could tell you that everything was fine between our two kinds. Fuck, I wish I could tell you that we hated each other and there was an effort underway for us to murder all of the pointy-eared bastards. But in reality," he paused and looked behind us down the hallway, "the Empress has stuck to her agreement with Jesme. There is violence now and then, and if an elven is found to have caused the fight, then they are executed. Other than that, there is not much conflict." "That sounds too good for me to believe," I said. Despite everything that had happened, everything that I had remembered, I still did not trust the elven people. I knew Talaxthi was honorable in her way, but I also knew she had a fierce and, if necessary, ruthless commitment to her people, and I did not believe she would truly allow a peaceful coexistence to continue forever. There was too much pain between our two races. There had been too much bloodshed and death, and neither the humans nor elvens could so quickly forgive and forget such a past. "Aye, I agree with you, Skinny. I'll let Jess tell you more. I try not to think too much about all that political stuff. Just makes my head hurt and the beer taste bad." We passed a mixed group of 3 human and 2 elven guards. All 5 of them greeted Graykin by name and asked him when he was going to be off duty. "Probably when I'm dead," he yelled back at them. "But I'll be at the bar tonight if you kids want to buy me a round or 4. "Sounds like some of them are your friends," I said, once we turned a few more corners of the labyrinthine castle halls. "Yeah, they can drink. Not all of them are bad. Here we are." We crossed one of the open foyers and entered the royal wing of the castle. Then we walked up a few flights of stairs and reached a hallway with guards posted every 5 feet. Most of the warriors were human, but there were a few elvens dressed in the green armor of the Empress. I grew worried that the elvens might recognize me, but none gave any alert at my presence. "The Duchess is inside as well," one of the human guards said to Graykin when we approached the decorative door that led to Jesme's private quarters. "Good, thank you," the old bear nodded, and the woman opened the door so that we could enter the suite. "I brought Skinny," Graykin called out after he closed the door behind us. "We are back here," I heard Nadia shout from a distant room, and I felt my heart flutter. The foyer to Jesme's apartment was filled with gray marble, gold sculptures of various-sized lions, and green plants. The surfaces of all the stonework and gold decorations were polished to a mirror-like shine. I almost had to squint my eyes to adjust to the light that poured from the open windows leading out to the distant veranda. Jesme's foyer was probably 6 times the size of my previous quarters in the castle, and I believe I spent more than a few dozen seconds standing with my mouth opened while I gawked at the splendor of the decorative room. "Come on, Skinny," Graykin tugged on my shoulder, and I fell in step behind the big man. He wore Caneth's axe on his hip, and I felt surprised that I had not noticed the massive weapon earlier. I hoped that the big man never had to use the weapon. The thought entered my mind with stealth, but once lodged there, I could not make it leave. I truly wanted peace between these people. While I was trying to escape the Empress's capture, I told her the same, but I wondered if there was still a part of me that wanted to wash this world with their blood. Now I knew that I was sincere. From what Graykin described, the two people lived together in peace. I would have never believed such a thing was possible, but more than 2 years had passed, and it seemed to be the norm. Perhaps elvens and humans could peacefully coexist, with neither race enslaving the other. You were right, Jess. Our handsome friend has returned to us. Graykin gestured to me with his ham-sized hands, and I walked from the foyer to Jessmay's sitting room. Both Nadia and Jessmay sat at a small oak table arranged amongst luxurious couches, decorative chairs, stands that held white canvas for painting, and dozens of musical instruments. My eyes focused on the two beautiful women, and I felt the room spin and my heart catch in my throat. Jessmay's platinum blonde hair was longer than I expected, and it fell down her back like a waterfall of brilliance. She wore an ivory dress that exposed both of her creamy, smooth shoulders. A simple silver amulet, shaped like the sun, adorned her beautiful neck. She rose from her chair. Her blue eyes twinkled with excitement when she saw me. Nadia's hair twisted down the side of her neck in an elaborate braid woven with flowers and silver chains. She wore a loose, violet tunic that just hinted at the shape of her breasts and toned body. She smiled and stepped around the table to greet me first. Her arms circled my shoulders, and mine ensnared her lean waist. She said nothing as she embraced me and pressed her cheek against mine with guarded affection. She smelled of lavender and gardenias. I don't know how long I held her, but I felt my eyes begin to water. It felt so wonderful to feel her in my arms again. "I want a turn, cousin," Jessmay laughed from next to us, and Nadia broke off her hug quickly. She looked into my eyes for a moment, and I saw dozens of conflicting emotions wrestling within them. She looked both joyous and dismayed. Her eyes had the tight sadness in them I had seen in those of elven generals, watching the front lines of their army lose the battle, proud of the valiant attempt their fellow warriors were making, but defeated and accepting of their fate, painfully aware their end was coming. "Sorry, Jess." Nadia's cheeks reddened, and she looked down. I wanted to ask her what was wrong, tell her I would make it better, and that I would never leave her again. But then Jessmay was in my arms. The queen hummed with pleasure, and nuzzled into me with the same unabashed affection she had shown me when we first became lovers. Jessmay smelled of roses and mint. I closed my eyes and stroked the silky smoothness of her hair, her skin, her warm, soft body. She felt as familiar and comforting as coming home. It had been ages since anywhere had been my home. I just wanted to hold her forever. "I'll leave you three alone for a bit. Give a call out into the hallway if you need me." Graykin gave me a wink and moved into the foyer. A few seconds later, I heard the door open and close. Then I was alone with the only living women that I loved. "Sit down," Jessmay pointed to a seat, and I slid into the comfortable chair. There was a decanter of water on the table, and Nadia poured me a glass. "Thank you," I said when she handed it to me. I took a long swallow of the cool liquid, and I noticed both women staring at me. "I was told I have been gone for 3 years," I said, after I set down the glass. "A little over two," Jessmay said. She did look more mature. Her eyes were more focused, and her face leaner. The changes made her look even more beautiful. "We thought you were dead. Talaxthi said that Ternia took you back to her world," Nadia said. "How did you return? The Duchess's face looked unchanged from what I remembered. "Is the Empress in the castle?" I felt anger rise in my stomach, and I fought to keep my voice calm. "Yes," they said in unison. "This is a private meeting. She might know that you are here, but I did not tell her." Jessme tilted her head slightly. "You seem angry." Ternia never took me back to her world. Their eyes opened wide, and I hastily explained that the Obarni clan leader figured out that Talaxthi had been somewhat responsible for Kanneth's death. Then I detailed how she attempted to negotiate with me, and how Talaxthi flipped the situation when her own army ambushed the Obarni warriors and murdered them. Then I told them how the Empress attempted to force me through the Radical. I spoke of the strange vision, how my armor appeared on my body, and my inspiration to attempt to use the Radical to get here, with the slim hope that I might be able to learn my daughter's name and awaken her before the Empress returned to Nya to stop me. When I finished my short tale, I drank the remainder of my water. My hands shook. I was nervous about telling them what had happened, and about being in the same room with both women, knowing how much I loved them both. When I had been with each of them alone in the past, justifying my feelings for both of them came easily, and I had blamed their outrage on their unnatural culture. After all that had happened, all I had recalled of my past and my feelings for Shlara and Iolorothi, I understood their anger and the complexities of our relationships. I had dismissed their ideas of fidelity, but I too had felt possessiveness flare up when I believed for a moment that Iolorothi's child was another man's. I had even felt a pang of jealousy when I learned Islata was pregnant. It was ignorant of me to pretend the women should not want commitment from me. It was not an outdated custom. It was love. I did not know how to fix things between the three of us, but I knew it was both painful and wonderful being alone with the two of them. "Is there something wrong?" I asked. They looked at each other, and then back to me. Nadia opened her mouth first, but Jessme raised her finger to interrupt her. "So you need the name of your daughter?" the blue-eyed woman asked. Her eyes looked as deep and turbulent as the ocean, and I felt myself become lost in them. "Yes. But I wanted to make sure that you were both okay. I wanted to see if the Empress was treating Nya as she promised." "The Empress has treated us fairly, though I'm afraid this is only because I have an unbelievable amount of leverage over her and her people." Jess smiled faintly. "What leverage?" "Perhaps that doesn't matter at the moment, Kaer. What will happen once you learn of your daughter's name?" she asked. Her heart rate increased. She was nervous. "I will go to the Radical." I looked at the Duchess. "I believe it to be the same one that Nadia was sent through. I know where to find it in the teeth." "And after you bring her into this world?" the Queen asked, and I saw the urgency in her face. "I will spend my life with her. What do you want me to say?" I felt my eyebrows tighten. "I want you to say just what you want to say, what you mean. I don't want to force anything from you. I want you to be honest." She shook her head, and Nadia sighed. "Where will you live with your daughter?" Jess asked. "The Empress will attempt to kill us. I will probably find a place for us to go far away from here." "I see. You both know how I feel about you." I pushed my fingers into the wood of the desk and closed my eyes for a few seconds. I considered telling each of them that I loved them, that I was torn, that I could never choose between them. Instead, I decided to speak of my daughter. "But my daughter needs me. She is lost in time. How can I commit to anyone else when she needs me?" "Kaer, it has been over 2 years," Nadia said, and shook her head. "We thought you dead." She looked at me with an indifference that stung more than her anger. I felt a flood of both relief and disappointment as I realized I was being arrogant, assuming the two women still pined for me. Of course they had found love elsewhere. I had died and left them behind more than once. Then you have found others to love. If you tell me so, I will be more than happy for you. Loving someone doesn't mean you want to possess them. It means that you want their happiness more than your own. You are being cruel. Jesme shook her head and her jaw clenched. Because I want to focus on my daughter? No! The woman slammed her fist down on the desk in a sudden movement that surprised both Nadia and me. Because you know how much I loved you. I thought I carried your child. I wanted that more than anything. I was prepared to give up all of this. She gestured around the room at the opulence and indicated her gown and then the castle as a whole. I would have happily given it all up for you, to raise your children. That was all I wanted. I did not mean to, but I found myself staring at Nadia, remembering what she had told me about wanting to be a mother, the pain she felt when she learned she could not bear children. But the Duchess remained stoic and stared at her cousin, ignoring my gaze. Jesme continued, her voice filled with more anger than sadness. Now you have a daughter, and I can't even share that with you? A tear flowed down her left cheek, and Nadia had turned her eyes down to the table. You say you love me, but you can't trust me with your daughter? Don't hide behind her. Jesme sat back and crossed her arms. Graykin was correct. She had changed. There was still obvious love in her eyes, but there was a hardness there I had never seen before. She was serious. She had been left on her own to depend on herself and knew that her kingdom depended on her. Might I speak? Nadia smiled at the blonde woman deferentially. Yes. Sorry, Nene. Jesme sighed and nodded, and I saw a bit of her softness return as she spoke to her cousin. The women had always loved each other, but Jesme had finally earned Nadia's respect, and I knew that was an honor that must have contributed to her confidence. I felt you leave. Nadia turned to face me. I can't explain the sensation, but it was as if the air left my body, and I could never quite breathe as easily. I caught Jesme shift in her seat slightly at the other woman's words. The dreams stopped coming. By then, I knew your daughter's name, so perhaps Iolorothi had no more need of me. I finally understood her insistence about speaking to my father. She paused and sat back in her chair. I felt my heart hammer in my chest. I wanted to scream at Nadia to tell me the name, but I knew she would not keep it from me much longer. He knew the location of the shrine in the mountains. I was preparing to leave Naya and journey there, then bring your daughter back through the device. He should know my role in this. You make it sound like you are the sole heroine here. Jesme shook her head, and the words rang with sarcasm. Her immaturity was surfacing again. Nadia closed her eyes and drew in a slow breath to calm her irritation. I was just about to explain that it was your idea, Nadia sighed. Jesme laughed to downplay her annoyance. I just want some credit. She smiled at me sweetly. Nadia rolled her eyes out of Jesme's view and turned to me. Her eyes were impossible to read as she stared at me. I sensed there was something she was holding back, and I wanted to speak to her alone, but I knew Jesme would object, and I did not want to be a source of conflict between them. Kaer, I need you to know. She paused and looked down. I do not have romantic feelings for you. Her words hit me like a hammer to the chest, and I felt the world spin for a few vertigo-inducing seconds. She met my eyes again. There was some pain in her eyes, some sadness, but she did not look at me with the adoration and need I had once seen. I believed her. My cousin and I have told each other everything. Jessmay looked a little smug, but Nadia was emotionless in face and voice as she continued. I understand that your relationship with her was much more serious than anything you and I ever shared. What I felt for you was simply a passing affection. Perhaps it was just Iola Rothi's love for you coming through me when she controlled my dreams, and when she released me, I was freed of my attachment to you. But you and Jessmay truly love each other. She needs you here. The kingdom needs you here. I do not want you to feel any conflict or confusion about remaining in Naya with us, with her. She looked down again, and Jessmay smiled brilliantly. There is still tension between us and Talaxthi, and now that we know she lied to us about what happened to you, we will have an upper hand in our negotiations. She finished placidly. I still felt dizzy, and I wanted to ask her more. I recognized it was immensely selfish of me to desire both women and expect both of them to love me back. But it was the truth of how I felt, and it hurt to know Nadia did not feel the same way about me anymore. I should have felt relief. This made my decision simple, but it did not make it easy. I listened to the sound of her heart beating, but the tempo was even, and held no hint that it was a lie escaping from her lips. "You have not made much progress in your relationship with your mother?" I said, to bring the topic back to Talaxthi, while I continued to consider Nadia's change of opinion. Had she found someone else? Or was she correct about Iola Rothi influencing her? Maybe she had never truly loved me, but was simply under the control of the elven woman. "She is interesting." The women exchanged a knowing glance that I could not decipher. I almost asked them to elaborate, but I realized I was losing sight of my goal. I had to get my daughter. There would be time to talk to Nadia and Jessmay about Talaxthi later. "Will you tell me the name of my daughter?" I stared into Nadia's soft brown eyes. She looked away, but answered quickly, "Of course. Will you return and help Jessmay rule Naya?" Her words were unexpected. Help her rule. I looked at Jessmay, and she beamed at me, her eyes hopeful and confident I would agree. "How can I help her rule?" I asked slowly. Nadia stared at me, unblinking. She was so devoid of emotion, I started to believe she was lying. She would put her cousin and her kingdom first, and if she believed it was better for me to be with Jessmay, I knew the Duchess would sacrifice what she wanted to make that happen. Or perhaps I was simply trying to protect my wounded pride. "I've already told you how you can help me," Jessmay said, and then turned to her cousin. "Are you sure, cousin?" The queen raised an eyebrow. "Yes." Nadia nodded, and her emotionless face finally cracked a slight smile. "I can see it in his eyes when he looks at you. I do not want to interfere with a love so strong," she said warmly. "I just wish to spend time with your daughter. We have much in common." She looked sincerely excited. "It sounds like the two of you have decided my fate," I said. Jessmay smiled, dismissing any hint of bitterness or protest I was trying to express. I had not agreed to any of this, yet the women were proceeding as if I were bound to whatever they had decided. As much as I cared for both of them and wanted to help, the sense of being enslaved flared up, and I reacted against it on a visceral level. I would not be controlled again. "As my husband, you may help me rule. It is in keeping with our laws. You will have jurisdiction over the council and negotiating power with Talaxi's generals. I am already spread thin, trying to keep reins on all of the radicals." As the words left her mouth, I realized the other change within the woman. It was such a slight difference. I would not have been able to detect it without consciously listening to her heart and tuning into the power of the earth around us. She was using magic. It was just the slightest trickle, almost imperceptible, but I could sense the earth flowing into her. Nadia was also using the magic, but the Duchess's pull was much stronger than the Queen's. "Talaxthi showed you how to close the radicals?" Jesmay nodded at my question. "How did I make it here, then?" "I sensed you. It is hard to explain, but I knew it was you, trying to come back to our world, and I released the grip I hold on the radicals. I am not skilled enough to manipulate each one individually, so I opened them all to allow you to come through, and then closed them again when you returned." Jesmay smiled faintly, and she took a small sip of her own water. "Then you told Graykin to find me." "Yes. Nadia and I thought you were forever gone. Perhaps we had a bit of hope that we would see you again one day." She turned to the Duchess, and the brown-eyed woman nodded. "Does that mean that you will need to release them again so that I can bring my daughter into this world?" "Yes," she nodded. "It will take me a few weeks to get there. I don't know exactly how to do the magic either. Can you risk leaving it open for a month or more?" "No." Jesmay shook her head. "The Empress was correct when she said that the Obarni would try to come here. I can feel them pushing against the radicals like bees flying into a window. They know I am keeping them at bay, and I believe they will be able to tell when I release the paths. We fear they might be able to push past Jesmay's magic. She is still in the process of learning, and even the Empress does not fully understand the power, so she is limited in what she can teach Jesmay," Nadia explained. "Talaxthi needs you. I see why you have so much leverage." I nodded and sighed. "At least until I slip and the Obarni pour into this world," Jesmay smiled and let out a little laugh. "The Empress and I are on friendly terms. She has taught me more than I ever thought possible, but the woman has the safety of her race in the forefront of her mind. I am useful to her only as long as I continue to keep her people safe." "Then let us hope you can continue to do so for the rest of your life." They nodded, and I leaned back into the cushion of the chair. I had more questions, but I knew I would not like their answers. What choice did I have but to cooperate with the Queen? I had already sacrificed so much to find the girl I did not even know but loved beyond measure. I could endure anything for her. "And you have a plan for my daughter?" They smiled, and I noticed a mischievous glint in their eyes. "I will leave under the guise of heading home," Nadia began. "Then I will sneak out of the castle and follow her." "Sound familiar?" Jesmay giggled, and Nadia smiled. The tension seemed to ease a bit for both of them, but I still felt nervous. I would not be able to relax until my daughter was safe with me. Even then, I would spend every minute worrying about her. "It sounds like you are going to anger a man I know who possesses a bear-like stature." I risked a smile, and they both laughed. "He needs a good adventure," Jesmay smirked. "Besides, it will be like old times now that you are here. I could not imagine a safer place than sleeping next to you by a campfire again." Nadia's smile faded at her cousin's words, but I don't believe that Jesmay noticed. "We will tell Graykin a few days before we leave. He won't like it, but I'm the Queen," she smiled. You will return to the castle with her, then? If I refuse, it seems I am at your mercy, as I need both of you to bring her back. Their faces paled slightly. They exchanged a glance. I will still tell you her name, and if you want, show you how to bring her into the world, Nadia said finally. Then she looked to the beautiful blonde woman. And I will still journey with you and unlock the radicals so that you can bring her here, Jesme said. I love you, Kaer. I know you love me as well. Please return to the castle with me, become my husband, and help me rule this country. I need your support. I need your trust. I need you. Her eyes betrayed her vulnerability, and the look reminded me of when I saved her from the Elvens. To me, it had just happened a year ago, but for her, it had been over 4 years. So much had changed, yet she still felt she needed me. I looked at Nadia, and our eyes met. I thought about the life she dreamt of, overseeing the East, working with her people by day, spending her evenings in the keep with her father and me, reading and discussing the events of the day. My heart flipped and squeezed in my chest. I loved both of these women, as I had loved Iola Rothi and Shlora, and now that I knew everything that had happened in my past, I felt like I might finally be ready to move forward and start a new life with someone else. But my child waited for me in the Radical. She needed me more than Jesme or Nadia, and my loyalty was to her over any other. She needed my attention and devotion. She needed me to focus on her, not worry about the political situation of a fractured human kingdom. She did not need me to love anyone besides her. "Do you want me to marry Jesme?" I asked Nadia. "Yes, it is for the best." Her voice came out as a whisper, and she looked away. Her heart did not flutter. She spoke the truth. "You do not love me," I whispered the question, and Jesme sat up in her chair to stare at her cousin. I wished we were alone. I did not want to have this conversation in front of Jesme, but the two women were united. "No, Kaer." Her eyes were glassy, and my heart broke in my chest. "You do not love me either. Search your heart. You know that Jesme will make you happier than I ever could." Nadia turned her face to Jesme. I looked to the queen, and her blue eyes met mine from across the small table. Her face was filled with adoration, and I remembered the many weeks we spent together in the cave, and later in the small dairy town of Meriam. I had once thought that it would be wonderful to spend my life with her. When I believed Nadia was dead. My eyes turned back to the woman who woke me from my endless slumber. I wanted to believe that she was lying. It hurt too much to think she did not care anymore, but it would make things easier. I had loved both of these women. Jesme would make the perfect wife. She was warm and caring and devoted. With her, I knew there would be little conflict. There would be warmth and affection. We would have children, and we would be happy. I should have wanted the life she was offering, just as I should have wanted Shlora. Now that I was being forced to choose, I knew I loved Nadia. But she did not love me. Her eyes betrayed sadness when she told me she did not love me, but perhaps it was simply because she knew her words would hurt me. I realized I was staring into Nadia's soft brown eyes, and I blinked back the tears forming in my own. I would never know the truth of her feelings. In so many ways, she reminded me of Shlora. Nadia was strong, but she still wrestled with her own demons. I knew she was torn between her sense of duty to her kingdom, her father, and the developing relationship she was forming with her estranged mother. I did not fit into her life now, and neither would my daughter. Logic could not ease the pain in my heart. I would never stop loving Nadia. I could hide my feelings from Jesme. I would have to. I will need time to get to know my daughter, I said to Jesme, but I am willing to return here. I love you, and I will do my best to serve you as a husband, but please give me some time to be with her before we marry. Yes, of course, Jesme's dimpled smile shone on her face, and I heard her breath leave her lungs with relief. How much time will you need? I am not sure. I smiled and almost shook my head. The princess, I knew, would have let me wiggle out of the question, but the queen before me understood that she needed exact commitments from her people. I will know more when I meet her. I turned to Nadia and wondered what the brief flicker in her eyes meant. What is her name? I finally asked after I regained control of my emotions. Via Rothi, Nadia said with a smile. The name struck me in the stomach, and the room seemed to glow brighter for a few seconds. It felt wonderful to repeat it in my head. Iola Rothi had chosen this name for her. It was beautiful and fitting. I will have a room prepared for you next to my suites, Jesme said to me as she rose from the table. Her ivory dress cascaded down with her hair, and she turned to her cousin. I will inform the Empress of my intention to join with Kyair. I am excited to see the surprise on her face. She will be horrified, I am sure. How will you play her lie about Kyair's exile? Nadia asked. I shall have to ponder that for some time. We do not need to plan a midnight escape now that I know of her deception. I will tell her I intend to accompany my fiancé. She will be unable to argue. Jess smiled. Nadia mirrored her grin. Three knocks sounded evenly on the door. The women did not look alarmed as the door opened. I recognized Graykin's heavy footfalls. The Empress and Alatoricht are heading this way, the big man announced. Thanks, Graykin. Can you summon Heron for me? Jesme asked. Yes, Jess. The big man turned to go, but the beautiful queen spoke again. Graykin, wait. He turned back around with a raised gray eyebrow. Stay here for a few more minutes. Kyair and I have some important news for the Empress, and I believe that you will want to hear it as well. Is that right? Is it good news? He glanced from Jesme to me, and then to Nadia. It is great news, Nadia said. Our eyes met again, and my heart cried. Her voice sounded sincere.
Chapter 45, Isle Rothi. Tell him her name! I screamed at the useless girl, but she and Kyair just ran past me without heeding my words.
You know that tactic won't work.
Antas lounged on a rock at the edge of the thick jungle. Kyair and Nadia had reached a plateau in the canyon. I assumed she wanted to be alone with him so she could tell him about the dreams I had sent her, but she had not mentioned them yet, and I was growing impatient with the human. She has 2 weeks to tell him. Why doesn't she do it? Frustration clawed at my stomach as if I had swallowed a live rat.
If only these mortals would just do as we say, the universe would be much easier to manage, don't you think?
Entus said with his usual playful mockery. I turned to glare at the man, but his eyes were closed against the late day sun. One of his bony legs was crossed over the other, and the old man looked like a lounging grasshopper. I growled at Entus and decided it was best to ignore him again. When we lived amongst the islands and he infuriated me like this, I would leap away to another island and avoid him for a few years. When loneliness overcame me or I had an idea to discuss with him, I simply summoned the strange little man by shouting his name. Moloch and Nyarathi's descendant had left my sight by turning past a curve on the top of this plateau. The jungle trees and light gray limestone blurred at my thought, and I instantly appeared behind the two of them. I didn't feel the heat of the high sun, but it was apparent from the sweat coming down the girl's back that she was working hard to keep up with my lover. As weak as he was from his time in the Radical, he was stronger than all of these feeble humans. "Tell him," I begged again. But the girl did not hear me, and I cursed her.
"Caer doesn't remember his past either. Maybe you should direct your anger at him."
Entus was sitting next to me now. "Her father was so easy to manipulate. This is beyond frustrating."
"Maybe it is her elven side. The last three generations of them have become difficult for you to communicate with."
Entus had told me this many times before, and I agreed with him. Nyarathi had understood the dreams I sent her immediately, and my dear sister had done as I asked. She taught the Obarni how to use the Radicals so that they could send Caer to this world. I had kept careful watch over her daughters, their children, and the next 30 of their kin, until the latest Empress gave birth to the idiot girl that stood before me. "They are speaking." I shushed Entus, and he fell silent. "Yes, you are fast. I can't keep up," the girl said to Caer. The millennia in the Radical had not been kind to the man. His beautiful face and body had been reduced to a skeleton, his skin stretched painfully over bone and wasted muscle. I feared Vyarathi would look as ravaged when he rescued her. She had not even eaten a good meal before she left. Oh, I prayed there was enough fat on her already thin body for her to survive the suspended state. "Can we break?" the girl asked breathlessly, and Caer offered her a drink. She was so weak. I had waited so long for her to awaken him, and now that they were so close, every wasted minute was maddening.
"You lead," he said.
"Thank you," she replied, and the girl waded through the stream and continued along the rocky edge of the cliffs next to the jungle. Caer watched her walk, and I saw the lust in his green eyes. "Damn it, she is supposed to tell you about our daughter, not distract you." Caer did not hear me, of course. My breath caught when he walked through my ethereal body and his skin swirled around my vision. He still smelled as I remembered, and the scent made my head spin with desire.
"He doesn't even speak their language yet. You should give it some time. We've made it this far. What do another few months matter?"
Entus said. "She is alone, Entus," I said softly and sighed. The little man put his hand on my shoulder.
"Not for long."
"I don't need your comfort. I need results."
"Well, then continue screaming at them. That is producing plenty of your results."
He sighed and removed his hand from my shoulder. I had stopped counting the years a dozen lifetimes ago. While I had grown more accustomed to the invisible hand I played in the lives of Malak and Nyarathi's kin, I still did not know what to make of the strange man who was my mentor in this afterlife. He was committed to helping me, but he had not been able to offer much assistance with my manipulations of my sisters or the Obarni's bloodline, since he did not share the connection with them that I did. He could only advise and encourage me. Entus and I had spent thousands of years together observing the living elvens and humans, yet I still knew very little about the man, and had long since grown bored attempting to decipher the truth in the riddles he spoke, or to elucidate his own personal history from the constant barrage of jokes and jests that tumbled from his lips. I trusted him, still. He had been with me too long to be motivated by anything but a sincere desire to help, whatever his reasons, even if he fucking annoyed me. Caer and the girl named Nadia were out of my sight again, so I shifted my perspective to stand next to them once more. It was a technique Entus had taught me after a few days, and I used it to instantly appear wherever I wished to be. It was useful for orchestrating my plans. I did not even need to know what my destination looked like. I could simply decide I wanted to observe someone or be in a particular place, and my vision shifted and took me there instantly. "It is getting late. We need to go back," Nadia said to Caer.
"We need to check the guard post."
He pointed off to his side where I knew the humans of the nearby tribe had an assignment of warriors. "Okay, one more hour, and then we should go back, yes?" Caer nodded at the woman's words. His eyes were bright green and seemed to sparkle against the sunlight. My heart filled with love for the man, and then quickly grew to anger when I saw him appraising the girl's lean body.
"Looks like he is hungry for more than food."
Entus laughed, and I shot another glare at him. My anguish just made him laugh louder.
He's been sleeping a long time, Iola Rathi. He has forgotten me, and he has forgotten you. Can't he look at another woman? No, he needs to find our daughter.
I knew my jealousy was unreasonable, but I could not rein in my rage. I wanted to live. I wanted to feel his lips and body on mine again.